welcome to the Essential Tennis Podcast. If you love tennis and want to improve your game, this podcast is for you. Whether it's technique, strategy, equipment, or the mental game, tennis professional Ian Westerman is here to make you a better player. And now, here's Ian.
Hi, and welcome to the Essential Tennis Podcast, your place for free, expert tennis instruction that can truly help you improve your game. This episode of the Essential Tennis Podcast is brought to you by SomersetSportsPerformance.com. Go check out SomersetSportsPerformance.com if you would like expert tips and instruction having to do with physical training and also nutrition. They offer an online training program starting at just $9.99 a month. So for $10 a month, it's an excellent value to get a personalized workout program and also nutritional program as well. Well, today we have Jeremy Plumley, who is a master racket technician, back on the podcast, and we're going to be answering a couple of different questions having to do with both racket technologies and stringing as well, mostly racket technologies. We have some good conversation. So sit back, relax, and get ready for some great tennis instruction.
And now it's time for Essential Tennis Q&A.
All right, back on the podcast with me is master racket technician Jeremy Plumley. Jeremy, welcome back to the show.
Hey, Ian, thanks for having me.
You bet. Well, you know what? Before we get going with answering today's questions, and we're going to do a whole show today with Jeremy answering different equipment questions having to do with racket selection and also racket technologies and some stringing questions as well. Before we get on to those questions, I've told people that you're certified master racket technician, Jeremy. Why don't you tell our audience briefly, what exactly does that entail? How do you get that certification, and what exactly do you have to go through in order to be a certified master racket technician?
Well, the master racket technician certification is basically an all-inclusive test that you need to take. There's two certifications to the United States Racket Stringers Association. There's the certified stringer, where you have to take a racket, build up a grip, rewrap the grip with a replacement grip within certain specifications that they give you. You also have to take out the existing grommets and replace them with new ones, and then they watch you string the racket with synthetic gut in the mains, and then natural gut in the crosses, and they basically just critique you in every aspect of your stringing. So the first part of the Master Racket Technician exam is that. With the second part, it's only for Master Racket Technicians, there's a comprehensive written exam where you have to go through all of the technologies from the major manufacturers, and there's also a section about racket diagnostic testing and also customization. A lot of questions about moving the balance point of rackets, also where to add lead tape to get this effect. It's about a 3-hour exam altogether.
Wow.
And the studying for it, as you can imagine, is pretty extensive because you've got to know all of the technologies. Mostly current. Some of the ones are, you know, from the recent past for all of the major manufacturers, from Wilson to Babolat, even down to Fisher and Yonex, some of the smaller companies.
Good stuff. Yeah, I really wanted people to get a sense that you really know what you're talking about when it comes to the gear type questions. And I know that you really love this stuff. You're a quintessential gear nerd, for sure, when it comes to tennis.
I know. If I could wear glasses with tape on them on the court, I probably would.
It's not a bad idea. We'll see if we can work that out. First time I have you on a video podcast, we'll get that hooked up for you.
There we go. Maybe a pocket protector to go with that?
Yeah, man. All right, well, let's get going with today's questions. Our first one comes from John in Real Life on the forums at EssentialTennis.com. And I'm going to read through a couple of sentences here that John posted so that you all really get a sense for where he's coming from. And this is a question that our listeners are really going to appreciate, I think, because it's something that all recreational club level players think about, spend time thinking about, especially if they take their tennis game seriously. And that has to do with racket selection and how it really fits in with your level and what manufacturers or what marketing says that you should be playing with. So here's a little bit of the writing that John in real life did to try to explain his question. He said, Jason said that he doesn't really think too much about his racket and strings. I think you can do that when you're younger. Steve mentioned that he tends to over-exaggerate his swing, sometimes swinging too hard. A different frame might enable him to swing easier with better results. Or maybe not. I'm not sure. My point is, how many of us take a truly objective look at what kind of head size, string pattern, string type, weight, balance, really complement our specific abilities instead of getting caught up with what the pros use or what other players use or what other posters tell us to use or newfangled technologies and so on. And then he gives a quick example of this. I've got one friend who plays with a Liquid Metal Prestige Mid Plus. He's an older guy. Yes, even older than myself. It's too heavy for him. He's late on everything. And yet when discussing frames, he says with great pride, my racket is rated for 4.5 players. One thing, that's marketing, not objective analysis. Two, even if it were true, he's not a 4.5 player and won't become one by playing with a frame that is arbitrarily rated for that level. And three, it's no way to choose a racket. So, Jeremy, basically what John is looking for is some insight from somebody like yourself who really knows the industry and who knows the equipment, how the equipment is made and designed for specific types of players. What do you think about his question having to do with kind of matching equipment, frames, strings, etc., for a specific type of player?
Well, the first thing that I really liked that he asked was, how many people actually go through all of this? And the answer to that is very few. And that's why people like me have a job. A lot of people, you know, they find a racket that they get at Target. They see a racket. They see strings. They see it's ready to go. They take it off the wall. They go to the park and they play with it. And they're happy and they're successful. And that's the last that they think of it.
Yeah, it can't, string can't be that
break,
bad.
Then they either replace it or, you know, they take it to a stringer.
Right. After all, they've got Roger Federer's picture on the front of it, so it must be good racket, right?
That's right. You know, and they probably think that that's the racket that Roger plays with. But the reason why that's not the best idea is because, one, those rackets, you know, the $35, $40 rackets are great to start off with. They're great to play hit and giggle tennis and all that. But if you want to increase your level, you need to have something a little bit more technologically speaking. Now, we'll get into technology later with one of your other questions.
Right.
But let's just talk about what John says is the marketing. The 4.5 player should use this type of racket. That's not even coming from the companies. Most of the time what that is that's Tennis Magazine. Each year they put out their big gear review section, and then from time to time throughout the year when the new frames come out, they review them and kind of lump them into categories. So that's not coming from the companies. That's coming from, you could argue if Tennis Magazine is objective with their testing, but basically what they do is they send out rackets to a group of play testers from different levels and find out how successful they are with each one, and then basically lump the rackets together like that. Now, the racket companies will tell you this is for your specific type of playing style, your swing style, and we've talked about that in the past where people with smaller, short swings, you should be using stiffer rackets or lighter rackets because they need the racket to do more of the work for them.
Right.
While big, athletic, hard swinging players probably should use something heavier and more flexible where they're producing the power and they're not getting a lot of help from the frame.
Sure.
So the most important thing is you have to know your game, and you need to be honest in this. I know that I am no longer a 5-0 player like I was in college. We've had lots of discussions at the club with the other pros of, you know, it's amazing how growing up I used a 90 square inch racket had no problem with it. But if I try and do that now, forget about it. You know, I'm 32 years old. I'm a little overweight. I've been doing more stringing than I have been playing. It's just, it doesn't make sense for me to try and use the Roger Federer or Pete Sampras model rackets. Maybe when I was 20, I could get away with it, but not anymore. So I have to look at other things.
So why is it then that, and by the way, I agree with you 100%. I remember when I first started teaching, out of college, I used a 95 square inch racket, in college to compete. And when the Roger Federer frame first came out, the 90 square inch, it was an Encode, right? Initially.
Yeah. Well, there was one before that, but yeah.
Okay, well, anyway, I ordered one of those with my Wilson contract because I was like, oh, sweet, I'm going to keep on playing tournaments, and maybe I'll switch to this, and I just couldn't hit it. It was too heavy, it was too small, and certainly I can relate to you with not playing as much and timing not being what it used to be and strength not being what it used to be. Yeah, players like us who competed at a fairly high level and were 5.0 level players, it's just not the same anymore. So how is it then that a 3.5 level player or a 4.0 level player can justify to himself hitting with a 90 square inch racket? Because we see that on like Tennis Warehouse forums, for example, don't we?
Oh, yeah, we see a little bit of that. And you know what? This is a great topic because, you know, being a gearhead the way I am, this is a huge pet peeve for me. A lot of times, and, you know, I see this on the boards, I see this when I talk to people, they're like, I used to use a 12-ounce racket, and these rackets nowadays that they call player rackets are just too light. I'm going to continue to use this.
Right.
Well, 6 years ago, yeah, okay, you were using that racket, but you know what? Your game's diminished a little bit, unless you've been working really hard. As you get older, you know, things happen. And beginners pick up these rackets a lot of times because it's the racket that Federer uses. It's
right.
The racket that, you know, the Nadal racket's a little bit more user-friendly, but it's still, you know, in the scheme of things, it's pretty heavy. They pick up these things and they learn to play with that. And it doesn't necessarily fit their game. And they kind of stick with that general type of racket all the way through. And then the other part of it, and John mentioned it with his friend, is, you know, it's a pride thing.
Right.
I use a racket that only the upper echelon players can use.
Right, yeah.
And you know what? Bragging rights is going out there and winning the match, not who swings what racket.
Amen to that, yeah.
Yeah, and as, you know, you always say, Ian, you know, it's not the racket that's going to make your game. It's going to be, you know, how hard you work, the instruction that you're getting, and, you know, putting the thought into your game. And then, for me, the racket comes in to fit your game.
Sure.
It doesn't make sense for my mom, a 3-0 player in her mid-60s, to use a 12.5-ounce racket, even though that's what she used to use because that was the highest technology back in the day. It also doesn't make sense for, you know, the exact opposite. You know, a 16, 17-year-old high school student who can, you know, swing 100 miles an hour, run all day, and do all that kind of stuff to use, you know, a 9-ounce Encode or K-Factor, K3, something like that.
Sure.
So you need to find the racket that fits into your game.
All right. So if I'm an honest player with myself, and I'm a club-level player, I'm working hard, I want the strings and the frame that are going to best fit where I am right now, where's the best place to go to get truly objective data? Is there a place where we can go where we can, you know, trust the what we're being told? Because, yeah, the marketing from these companies saying, oh, this and this player hits with this racket, and so, you know, this is going to improve your game. You get more control, more power, yada yada. Where can our listeners go where they can actually get honest advice or input?
Well, they can go to the Essential Tennis forums, of course. They
nice.
Can get them from you and me.
Nice. And good job, Jeremy.
But okay, if you're working with a pro, okay, you should talk to them first.
Okay.
Now, chances are your pro is going to be under contract with somebody. Like, you're with Wilson, I'm with Babolat.
Right.
So we're set up to be biased in that. So they can kind of give you a recommendation for what you should be looking for. If they don't say you need to be using the Babolat Pure Drive, then maybe get from them, what kind of specifications should I be looking for? Should I be looking for a mid-plus head size, an oversized head size? What sort of weight range should I be looking for? What kind of balance? Head light, head heavy, and that kind of thing. And then you can go online, and there's a racket finder on tenniswarehouse.com, and it will pull up. You put in the specs that you want, and it'll pull up all the rackets that are available with it, that fall into the parameters that you've searched for. Whether it's Wilson, whether it's Babolat, it could be Bancroft. It could anything that's on the market that they can sell to you, they are going to put in the search findings.
Yeah, and by the way, listeners, if you go to your pro, your local teaching pro, or maybe somebody that you're taking lessons from, and you ask them, you know, what kind of specifications am I looking for? If they can't answer those questions pretty readily and kind of off the top of their head and give you a good idea of what you should be looking for, and instead they say, hey, we've got this racket on sale this week, you should definitely hit with this. Be careful, guys, because you would like to think that somebody who teaches for a living would give you honest advice, but Jeremy, correct me if I'm wrong, but there are pros out there who will just try to sell you, for sure.
Oh, absolutely. There are many pros out there where they have a favorite racket.
Yeah.
They take it out with them on court, and they recommend it to all of their students. They might have eight of them in their pro shop ready to sell, or you might have special order it, but that's the racket that they like. It works for them, and they push it on everybody. And unless they're only teaching 4-0 players that like to serve in volley and, you know, love polyester strings, then that's great. But they're probably not doing their students a service with that.
Yeah, it's a shame. I've seen several pros that I've worked with over the years at different clubs do exactly that, and it's too bad because different racket selections might have helped their students out a little more. But that's just kind of business, I guess, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, anything else on this topic, Jeremy, before we move on to a new one?
Basically just, the things to look for in a racket varies depending on your game. If you're a baseline player, a head heavy frame is probably going to be a little bit better for you. You get a little extra mass, a little more racket head acceleration as you're going through the ball with a head-heavy racket. If you're a serve and volley player, you're probably going to like something that's more head-light because it's going to be more maneuverable at the net. And then if you're somewhere in between, you want to find something that's probably a little bit more evenly balanced.
Okay.
Those are kind of your general guidelines.
All right, good stuff. And guys, as Jeremy mentioned earlier, if you have any specific questions or if you feel confused about all the different selections out there, definitely feel free to come to the forums at EssentialTennis.com, where Jeremy has his own section of the forums called Gear Review, and he'd be happy to answer any questions you might have directly. He's a great resource for gear, and that's why I have him here on the show. Let's move on to another question, and I love this question because I'm kind of a skeptic when it comes to racket technologies and string technologies. All right, yeah. So I'm a huge skeptic. I mean, I'm a big believer, and it's the player that makes the win or not. Granted, yes, obviously, racket technology has come a long ways in the last 10 or 15, 20 years. But let me read this question. It will probably describe it better than I am. This comes from Howard in Canada, and he wrote and asked, I'm wondering if you can explain / myth bust some of the new racket technologies like Teflon grommets and UTEC from Head, 4D from Dunlop, and brand name string from No Name String, etc. I suspect that it is probably the same as golf. e.g., the best thing you can buy to improve your game is not a club, but rather a lesson. So, Jeremy, tell us exactly how much weight do these new technologies have when it comes to our actual performance? Are they actually improving, you know, our spin, our power, our control, or is that more a function of our technique? What do you think?
As a fellow teaching pro, it's going to be your technique that dictates how much spin you put on the ball, how much power you get. That being said, the racket that you use can help that. All things being equal, a larger sized head will give you more spin, more top spin than a smaller head because there's more hitting area. Also, the same thing goes for power. The larger head will give you more power than the smaller one. Does the technology really make that big of a difference? I hope none of my none of the reps I work with are hearing this, but you know what? they really don't that much. Does a Dunlop Aerogel 300 play any different than the Dunlop Aerogel 300 with the 4D braiding technology? No, not really. I mean, it's going to be a little different. It's a different technology. It's going to be, you know, probably a little bit more stable. They're not going to put all this money into research if it does nothing, particularly the smaller companies, the ones that are just trying to, you know, keep a hold of their 3% market share. Things like a wider racket, when that was a new technology, gave you more power. Yes, that was a huge technology. The long body rackets from, about 10 years ago now. Yeah. they gave you more reach. They gave you more leverage on your serve, and you know, everybody had an inch and a half extra long racket, and that was great. But as time goes on, these technologies get scaled back. It's tough to find a racket out there now that is more than an inch extended. It's very difficult. I mean, I have lots of players that come in with their old Prince Thunderbolt racket that's an inch and a half extended, and they're like, you know what, I love the way this racket plays. I haven't found anything that's comparable to it, and unfortunately I have to tell them, and it's not really because of the length. Wide body rackets aren't as big of the rage now. Nothing like the old Wilson profiles. So some technologies do more good than others. Is a K factor that much different than an N code? Probably not. But it's going to do something, but it's not going to be the end all be all what takes you from being a 3-5 player up to a 5-0 player.
Sure.
It's not going to help you dominate your USTA league because you just got the new Pure Drive from Babolat as opposed to your old Pure Drive. It's still going to be the work that you put in on the court and, you know, just busting it out there all the time.
Well, my favorite thing that you said during that explanation was all things being equal, all other things being equal, yeah, you might get some more spin with a larger head or some more power with a larger head. And I think that's a very, very good way of putting it because, for example, some manufacturers will say you'll get more, let's just use spin, you'll get more top spin with this racket. Well, that might be the case if you have a racket path and technique that are conducive to creating top spin. But if you had a flat or a slice forehand ground stroke to begin with, there's going to be no change in topspin, will there?
No, exactly. And there's been a lot of discussion on the forums about textured strings and shaped strings, and you know, do they really help you get more spin? Well, yeah, they have more bite. So if you're swinging with the right motion, it might give you a little bit extra, but it's going to be technique before it's anything else. And, you know, it's not to say that technology is worthless.
Sure.
These things, while money drives all of it. That's the reason why every 3 years they are coming out with a new technology, and your head radical has now been discontinued for a new one.
Right.
That's what's driving this. They do also want to improve you as a player, but ultimately they want to do that so you spend money on their rackets. And I don't want to sound like a conspiracy theorist here, because I don't fall in that same category as you put yourself in, where you're a skeptic about it, because I always have hopes for these technologies. When the reps come and show me their new rackets, I want to believe that this thing is going to perform up to the level that their literature says it will.
You're a believer, and Jeremy.
I am. And I'll tell you, the newest technology that's out there that I think is really cool is the head UTech technology that I think the person even mentioned that in their question. What that is basically they have a material called D30 in the throat of the racket. And what it is, it basically looks like that pink goo that you used to be able to get out of the quarter machines at the grocery store that you'd throw against your parents' wall and it would stain and all that stuff. You could stretch it, and, you know, now as a parent, I hate this stuff. But it's basically like that. And the premise is the faster you swing, the stiffer this material gets. So you can get more power from the swing. But if you're swinging slower, you're trying to hit a touch shot, it doesn't get as stiff, and it helps you with those feathery drop shots and stuff like that.
Huh.
And in hitting some with the new head speed rackets, it does, I don't know if it's the material or what, but it does kind of feel like when you're really going after the ball, you can really go after it, but when you want to hit that soft shot, you can.
That's interesting.
If you run across a place that has the display for the D30 technology, you should check it out. It's a pretty cool thing. It's got a little hammer, and you can mash it in there really good, but if you take a cut at it and really hit it, it doesn't give. So who knows if that really makes that much of a racket, but darn it, it's cool to talk about.
Nice. All right, well, Jeremy, I've got good stuff. I've got one more question here. We're just about out of time that I want you to answer quickly. Having to do with stringing. Thanks for the for your insights there on the technologies, and I get the feeling we could probably do a whole half hour show on that. But hopefully, Howard, that gives you a good start on that. And if you have any follow up questions, feel free to go to the forums. I'm pretty sure you're already a member over at the forums. But lastly, here, Jeremy, I want you to answer a question from Brian Mark, and he wrote and said, "My local pro shop is telling me that a drop weight straining machine doesn't work to properly tension poly and Kevlar strains. Is there any truth to this? What type of machine might I need if drop weight doesn't work, or are they just making sure I come back for $30 plus strainings of my rackets every 3 to 4 weeks? What do you think?"
More conspiracy theorists.
Yes.
It. You know, it's funny because, Ian, as you know, just a few weeks ago, I kind of did an experiment between a high-end machine and a drop weight machine.
Yeah, right.
And if anybody was over on the Tennis Warehouse forums in the stringers section, you probably saw that there was a pretty good argument going on with a lot of people about about this very subject. Not necessarily with poly and Kevlar strings, but just stringing in general. What I'm going to say about a drop weight machine is, you know what, if you're stringing your racket, you're stringing in a couple of your friends' rackets, they're great. If stringing is what you do for a living, like me, I can't use it. It takes too long to do each racket. There's a lot more manual labor that has to go along with it rather than, you know, taking the string and pushing a button and it pulling it. If you're good at using a drop weight machine, you're going to produce a good string job. You know, it's kind of like the racket. If you know what you're doing on the court, you can pretty much play with anything. It might not be the most efficient use of your time, might not be the most effective, but you can get it done.
When it comes down to it, with enough practice, he could get the same results with a drop weight.
It's probably not going to be the same as a $3,000 machine. I don't know what his pro shop uses.
Okay.
But particularly with polyester and Kevlar strings, because they're very stiff and there's very little stretch to them, they're not resilient, it's difficult to get it pulled to the same amount of, you know, tension for each rack, for each individual string. So it's going to require a lot more kind of pulling, and people who are, you know, used to using the drop weight machine know what I'm talking about.
Yep. I used one back in the day, so I know exactly what you're talking about.
Right.
It is tough.
It's not, you don't always get the tension on your first pull.
Right.
Sometimes you got to, you know, pull a little harder with your hand and get that string a little bit tighter before you put it in the jaws and bring the weight down.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what slows down strain on a drop weight, because it's not just there. It's not like a crank machine where you crank it back and it locks once it hits the specific tension that you set it for. So it's difficult to do that with these stiff strings because there's just not a lot of stretch to them. Now, we've got, you know, we have other players that we know of, Ian, that string polyester on their drop weight machines.
Sure.
And you know, it comes out fine. It takes them about an hour to string like that. But I don't think that what the pro shop was saying was completely true. You can tension it somewhat close. If you're really good with your machine, you can probably get it darn close. But it's going to be more accurate on a higher-end machine. And it's not just because of the tension head. It's because of a whole bunch of other things that go along with it, how the frame is mounted, and also stringer technique. So
okay.
I don't think you can't do a good job with the drop weight, but it's a lot more difficult to do it with the drop weight.
So if he wants to save a couple bucks and get a drop weight and do his rackets himself, it's not going to be exactly the same, but it's definitely going to be good enough. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, and the thing is, if it feels good to you, then that's what it comes down to.
Sure.
I mean, and honestly, it sounds like if he's breaking polyester or Kevlar every 3 or 4 weeks, it sounds like he's the type of person that should be definitely looking at getting a stringer.
Yeah.
But that's a whole different topic. We could do a whole show on just selecting a specific type of stringing machine.
Well, Jeremy, we're over time, so we're going to wrap things up for today. But thank you very much for being on the show and sharing your insights with us on these three questions. And I look forward to having you back on the show again in the near future.
I look forward to coming back.
All right, that brings the Essential Tennis Podcast, episode number 64, to a close. Thank you very much for joining me today on the show. And one more time, I'd like to thank SomersetSportsPerformance.com for their support of the podcast. If you enjoyed today's show, and if you've been listening to the show for a while now and have learned and improved your game because of it, I'd like you to do two things. First of all, go register for the forums at EssentialTennis.com and come be part of the community along with myself and lots of other listeners who are building themselves up as tennis players each and every week by getting the good instruction here and going out and working hard at their games. More and more people are coming to the forums, and it's just a very friendly, close feeling community there, and I'm having a great time interacting with everybody. So come over and tell us what you've been working on and how you've improved your game and the hard work that you've put in, and you can join in along with us. Also, if you've appreciated the show, do me a favor and tell somebody else about it. Tell a hitting partner or a teammate, somebody else who you play tennis with, and that would help me a great deal in trying to build the show a little bit more and get some more listeners. So that does it for this week. Thanks a lot, everybody. Take care, and good luck with your tennis.